Follow us on Twitter at VoiceAmericaTRN. Get the lowdown on guests, new shows, and your favorites. That's VoiceAmericaTRN. The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit VoiceAmericaHealth.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live Internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management. Good afternoon and welcome to Family First with five-time author and top speaker Randy Rolfe. Your family may be facing a variety of issues that you'd like addressed. No two families in the world face identical problems, but Randy has seen almost all of the difficulties families today face, and she and her expert guests have the answers that you seek. Now, here is your host, Randy Rolfe.
Hello and welcome to Family First. This is Randy Rolfe, your host, and I'm really excited today about our guest. We're going to be talking about what makes your child love reading. What are the best ways to help your child love reading? We're hearing so much today about how children are failing to learn the basic academic skills in our school systems. Children have learning difficulties or attention problems or just lack the support they need to believe they can succeed. And there are frightening statistics in this new digital world showing that some children admitted to our colleges are deficient in writing and reading. And my guest today is a highly accomplished woman in real estate and business and also in publishing, as well as being a mother of children now in college. And with all her accomplishments, she's taken a special interest in helping children to get excited about reading and adopt it as a lifelong habit. She even decided to take direct action by writing and publishing books for her children and for other children as well, and has published a wonderful book called Sea Breezes, Salt Air, Adventures with the Bunny Cousins. She even decided to give us some practical tips about how busy parents can get involved in their children's reading success without becoming just one more teacher. So listen in. Constance Baranzano is president and founder of C. Avery Brooks, which is actually the part publishing company, a combination of her children's names. And she pursues both her desire to learn all she can about the world and her desire to use her artistic talents to teach language, art, and science to young minds. So she did both the texts and the drawings in her book. Connie was a paralegal for a major Philadelphia law firm to learn more about marketing her own product. And with her interest in women's health and beauty, she became a commercial model. In 1991, she was the youngest female real estate broker licensed in her Pennsylvania area. She's helped hundreds of children reach their reading potential with her concept of fun reading, which we want to hear all about. With help from her two daughters and her husband, she successfully published her wonderful children's book, Sea Breezes, Salt Air, Adventures with the Bunny Cousins. And then she went back to school and earned her MBA in 2006 just to show her kids that learning is a lifelong adventure. And she's also on the board of the National Society of Colonial Dames for Pennsylvania, so she's in love with history and our Constitution. And she's also a league tennis player and loves how the game mirrors real life. So welcome, Connie. Thank you so much for joining us on the show.
Oh, Randy, thank you so much. I'm truly thrilled to be here.
Great, great. And I mentioned you've worked in law and business before you started writing for children. How did you become interested in creating a children's book?
Okay, well, first of all, I'd like to say the art of writing does begin as a skill. We learn grammar, sentence structure, we increase vocabulary. I would say I became interested really ever since I learned to formally read and write. As a kindergartner and preschooler, I loved picture books, but I didn't know what those little characters and figures, what they were. Of course, they're letters and words. So I began to really formally read and write when I was in the first grade. I was really enthralled with the power of the written word and what it brought to mind. I remember the classic series, the Dick, Jane, and Sally series. That was in first grade, and I really found it as magical. It was a whole new universe that existed, and just on that one printed page, and then, by golly, there were pictures, too. I mean, it was just fabulous. So that's one piece to it. Also, I have to say, of utmost importance, is there were a lot of books in my family home. Most of them were, I believe, from my mother, combination of my mother's childhood and my father's. What I recall is a very, very thick-bound Mother Goose. There was the Brothers Grimm. There were the stories of Jack London. And all throughout this, throughout college, I was a French language major and an applied arts minor. And then I got into business law as a paralegal, and that was wording in legalese, if you will. It was what they call boilerplate, but it had its precision, it had its discipline, which I really, really liked, and I think which really helped me to ultimately get to where I am. So beyond college, business law, later I was a broker landlord. All throughout that time, I really truly just felt this book in me. And I never let it go. I never really knew what it was going to be, but I just stuck with that desire. So that's really how I began.
That's so cool. I know you do inspirational lectures on following your dreams, and you know, I've talked to so many parents in my own work who say, "Gee, you know, I wish I could had time to just write a children's book like I'd like my kids to read." And how did you actually go about just getting it done?
Well, actually doing it, I will say that it took discipline and diligence. I mean, that is a really great question. Throughout my presentations to schools and classrooms, and including visiting parents as well, that question would come up. How did you do it? How did you find the time? I would basically set away a certain piece of time that I knew was kind of my quiet time, if you will, be it in the very early morning or later on at night. So it was basically when I wasn't receiving any distractions in the household. And so because I really needed focus.
Yeah, I think so much it's about focus and discipline and knowing what you really want. I mean, people do make time for things that they really feel in their heart they need to accomplish. So tell us about getting the book published. I know you started your own publishing company, so tell us about that process.
Okay, well, after a lot of deliberation, I decided to self-publish. The actual imprint is called Bunny Express Press, and that's an imprint of my overall company, C. Avery Brooks, Ltd. The C. Avery Brooks, that comes from a combination of my name and my girl's name. The Bunny Express Press, I thought it just sounded really cute. I mean, there's a lot in a sound. That was a major decision to self-publish. I come from a business-minded family, and so it didn't seem too overwhelming. There were certainly lots of steps involved, but again, with the background that I had built upon from before, even though the steps were new, I knew that steps had to be taken. It was process. So it wasn't too overwhelming for me, even though I thought, oh, geez, you know, what is I think it's called URI number, something like that. But you have to apply for different numbers. There are all these little details. So you find out about those things. Accelerating the book production process, that's another reason that I self-published. I wanted it done and out there. I had queried some of the top publishers for fun, like Simon & Schuster, Little Brown, Random House. I have to say they sent me very polite rejection letters, but that was fine with me. A little story that I'd like to share is there was our friend Walt Disney, and he was actually fired from the Kansas City Star for lack of creativity, whereas, you know, we know how he contributed to the world and to children's imagination and minds, and only, you know, when he became a success, and then in turn, he actually bought the newspaper later on in life. So you never know. It, you know, there are decisions to be made. I think it's just important to know that there is a business side to writing and publishing, Many artists and writers I know revealed to me that they tend to forget about that. A cousin of mine, he is a professional illustrator, and I called him for some of his input, and he gave me the sage advice that I'd like to share with everyone is you really do have to look at the business side of the publishing companies. I told him that I definitely want the main characters to be the bunny cousins. And he said I should definitely self-publish. He said many times publishers, they may need horses, dogs, cows, cats stories, and they'll change many times what you are offering depending on what their market needs are. So that was a crucial piece of advice to me, and it spurred me on to actually self-publish and to continue with that. And bingo, I created the Bunny Cousins. They were the characters that I wanted, and they're here.
Yes, that's so exciting, and your pictures are just adorable. They all have such personalities, and it's delightful to look at the book. And I love Bunny Express Press, what you said about in law writing, you really learn the power of words, the power of one word, and your respect for words is awesome, and it shows in your writing. How did you invent these the bunnies in the first place? Was your kids involved in that, or is just something, a vision you had all your life?
That's a great question. I would say my girls were definitely involved. As far as getting a story together and moving a storyline along, I knew that I wanted four main characters, but I obviously wanted them to complement each other but be different at the same time. I had thought of Mola. I kind of like knew all along they would be bunnies. It's hard to explain. I just rather knew that. I also knew that I could draw bunnies. It might be harder to draw dogs or cows or whatever. I thought, well, bunnies I can do. So there were bunnies. And then the next piece of it was what do I really call these characters? They have their own individual names, but as a group, what did I want to call them? Because I knew that was important. Children like to do things in group processes, so I wanted the four individual characters to have a group name. So I ran I hired a company to do a legal trade name search for me, and I had them search two things, the Bunny Sisters and the Bunny Cousins. And I ultimately chose the Bunny Cousins because the words just sounded better when they were spoken. And back to my girls, I definitely asked for their input, and it was very interesting because each one individually would smile and beam when they said those two words, Bunny Cousins. And so I said, wow, you know, we're sticking to that. So the characters are known as the Bunny Cousins. Individually, they have their own personalities. Mimi Monette, the artist and the multitasker. There's Brainy Bunny, a little stereotypical. She's the science math bunny. There's Chunky Chunk Bunny, who is an athlete, musically inclined, and she sort of has these superpowers. There's also Carrot Bunny, who's a bit tiny, and she's the cook, and she's a very, very sprightly, innocent, sweet character. It was interesting because I could draw three of them. They just came, and they came down on the paper when I drew them. Mimi Monette, Chunky Chunk, Carrot Bunny. But it was interesting. I didn't know about Brainy Bunny, and I struggled with her in my mind on paper a little bit. I didn't want to do too much because I wanted her to come out as instantly somehow as the other three. And it was very sweet because I was at the dining room table at my parents' home in Maryland one morning. Again, it was nice and quiet, the sun shining through. It was really quite lovely and beautiful. And all of a sudden, I thought, gee, I guess I should really try this again. And I just sat down with a pen and paper, and bingo, there was Brainy. I mean, who knew? But that's the creative process. You have to do things spontaneously.
Yeah, that it's funny that Brainy was a little tougher because you're so brainy. Maybe you knew her too well.
I don't know. The girls were definitely directly involved in the creative process just all along throughout the character development, the editing, some of the words. And children are quite honest. They will let you know immediately, yay or nay, if something makes sense or not. So it was quite a group effort.
Now, tell me how you got involved in helping other children beyond your own. And how did you develop your concepts of helping them truly enjoy reading?
Okay. Actually, at the time when I was doing the book, things have a way of coming together at the same time. In our public school system, they'd sent letters out to the community for college graduates to serve as substitute teachers. So myself and some of my friends, we responded and we were hired. And ultimately, I wound up being a substitute teacher in two different public school systems for about 3.5 years. And this was while my girls were going through elementary, middle school, and early high school. So it was interesting. What I discovered was no matter what subject I taught, I wanted to relax the students, suggesting for them when they were on a task in front of their other classmates for them to take their time, to find a way to enjoy the subject material. So that was one way. Another way was I would take my girls and their friends to the library story hours to really foster a love of reading and to listen to the flow of stories. Don't get tripped up on vocabulary or what makes sense or what doesn't. Just listen to the flow and eventually you will understand the meaning.
Oh, that's so cool. Well, we're coming up on a break. And so I want to continue on with how you go about letting kids really take the time to understand what they're reading and to enjoy it, rather than getting caught up in what school often emphasizes of saying the word right or stopping when there's a comma and getting kind of nervous about reading or reading aloud. So I want to continue with that question and okay. How you've done that with other schools, okay?
Okay, great. Thank you.
Be sure to friend us on Facebook. You can do it right now. Visit facebook.com/Voice America or search for us at keyword Voice America.
What if thinking just a little bit differently about your daughter could make her more respectful, a better student, or less vulnerable to peer pressure? What if a few simple changes in your words with your son could make him more responsible, a better listener, or more fun? Five-time author and dynamic speaker Randy Rolfe has answers to your questions about family matters. Whether it's your kids, parents, schools, health and diet issues, finances, or life balance, Randy can help you. The World Ambassador for Family, Randy Rolfe has been helping families since 1985 to minimize the stress and heartache of modern living. To access some great and free downloadable tools, to get one of her internationally acclaimed books, or to have her inspire and excite your next event as your featured speaker, go to www.randyrolfe.com. That's RandyRolfe.com. Your family will thank you.
Opinions, options, answers. Voice America Health and Wellness.
You're tuned in to Family First with your host, Randy Rolfe. To speak to Randy or her guests, please call 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. You may also send an email to randyrolfe@randyrolfe.com. Now, back to Family First.
Welcome to Family First, and we have Connie Baranzano as our guest, and she's speaking about how to make your children love reading, or how to inspire them to love reading. And she's written a wonderful children's chapter book and has taught a lot of children through teaching in classrooms and getting them enjoying reading. And so I wanted to ask, Connie, what have you observed or concluded from that experience of teaching children, not only your own, but kids in school, how children learn and what reading can mean to them?
Okay, what I've consistently noticed is that children learn best, whether in a formal classroom setting or not. I call it teaching without walls. Children learn best when they are both motivated and relaxed. Okay, so it's really those two things. They have to have the desire. They truly must be motivated. And they have to physically and mentally be relaxed to let new input come into their minds for them to evaluate. So when they're free to express themselves, you know, they say what they feel and they bring their thoughts to the next level. And sometimes this isn't easy in a classroom setting, but, you know, I would do my best to, let's say, quiet the classroom and as a teacher to be a good listener. If the child's reading aloud, give them physical cues of nodding agreement or encouragement. And probably the most important is being respectful to the student. When children know they as human beings are respected and have value, this will relax them. They say, hey, wow, you know, like they're really, you know, listening to what I'm saying. And children will really, really love that. What I find very important is I would tell them that it's okay to make a mistake. It's natural. Kids try so hard for perfection, and we all make mistakes. But once I told, the interesting point is once I would say it really is okay to make a mistake, that would relax them. And then, let's say if they're reading aloud, they would read extremely well. So there wouldn't be any mistakes.
So they wouldn't have that stress and tension, and they'd do better.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, that's so cool. And I love what you said about giving them cues that you're actually listening and caring about what they're saying, not just how they're saying it, because they can get so anxious if they feel like you're judging their performance. But if they feel you care about what they're saying and respecting their efforts, then they will be much more relaxed. That makes so much sense. I love that.
Yeah, I guess another thing I'd like to quickly add is some of my daughter's friends, for fun, they would say, oh, can your mom read over my paper or my college essay? And I would say, well, you know, I won't change it. This is your paper, not mine, but I'll be happy to look at it and give you comments. And then once in a while, I would find a paragraph or something, and it wouldn't make any sense. And the coolest thing is that they would be sitting right there next to me, and I would say, now this, I don't quite understand what you're saying. What are you trying to say? And then they would say it in one or two sentences, and I'm there like, write that down right now. So that was really fabulous. I think, again, back to them relaxing and freeing up their minds. That's when we all think the best.
Yes, that's a great story, because they will, their oral delivery takes away all this, the tension of having to write it, and then they come out with a clear thought. That's really neat. You've been asked to speak on implementing your dreams, and what's the most important message that you try to give to your young audiences about really carrying through with their passions?
Okay, it's the constant theme that I had when I spoke at a number of schools in my area, public and private. My most important message is to be persistent, to never give up. In one way or another, follow your dreams in whatever form necessary. I mean, I did. I moved around a lot. I did a lot of different things, as you described in, you know, your opening biography. But nonetheless,
yes.
Yeah, there was that thread, and I always felt it. And trust your feelings. Trust, you know, that there are other things going on. These thoughts of doing a book one day, they may take a back seat sometimes, but just because they're not forefront doesn't mean that they're gone forever. They're just in shadow, but they're still very real.
That's great. So how does reading to or with a child help them build their personal self-worth and self-esteem and sense of future success?
Okay. I would say, you know, again, it's about building confidence. Once the confidence builds, children begin to experience a new reality for themselves, the world of imagination, what ifs. It helps them evaluate the physical world they're in and their place in that world, and also gives them personal control as they gain knowledge and insight and positive feedback from us adults that yes, they're learning to read and make the word and meaning connections. They discover new horizons. They become explorers, essentially.
Oh, that's so cool. And so many of the younger children can even make inanimate objects into characters, and how you keep older children from shutting down their imaginations. And your book is about these wonderful bunny cousins who spend the day at the beach, and they have such imaginative adventures. And so many adults don't even have that kind of imagination anymore. So how do we keep kids from losing that creative imagination?
Okay, I will say from leading our girls through preschool, elementary, middle school, high school, and college bound, I've seen as kids grow up, they're just under so much pressure to stay ahead, to be the next big picture, to get into that most desired college, to be the lead in the school play. And I agree that they can lose that innocence of youth that you try so hard to foster to explore whatever their imaginations conjure up. But I think I have found a way to keep these kids young, motivated, and focused on having a fulfilling life and just, keep on growing and not shutting down their imaginations. And what it is I've said this to my girls, I say, teach the teacher. From middle school and beyond, I've repeated this mantra to my girls when they were stumped to write a paper, writer's block big time, or intimidated by the teacher or the classmates in a classroom setting. That's the mantra, teach the teacher. We're all students of life, and by saying one valuable on-topic concept or idea, the teacher will be thought-provoked, the other students as well, and you, the other student, you've used your imagination as well.
Oh, I love that. I really relate to that, Connie, because in school, I thought just throwing back at the teacher an exam essay or something, what they had told me was really boring and would be boring to the teacher. So I always tried to gel something creative and a new way of looking at the topic. And I think that really helped me get through school with a lot of achievement. But it made it interesting to me, too. I was taking a second look at the subject and trying, like, I love that, teach the teacher. That is a perfect way to say it. And it keeps the kids like they're actually contributing, not just regurgitating. They're actually contributing something to the learning process for everyone. That's really neat.
Oh, thank you. Right. And that gets their imaginations going.
Exactly. So you emphasize the importance of stories at the end of the day and reading to the children. And so what do you recommend for parents who just, they come home exhausted, they have full-time or even two jobs to make ends meet? And can you share some suggestions of how to keep up their energy or make the end of the day special and empowering for the kids and the parents together?
Right. We came across that as well. And what my husband and I rather just discovered is there is a very powerful way to make the end of the day special. And we call that story time at bedtime. My husband and I, we would create stories aloud and the girls too, right before bedtime. I mean, we'd have lights out and we'd take turns. It'd be one person, maybe one night, depending how long the story went, or someone would pick up the end of the story. We would really very much free flow. And that was really great for family bonding. There aren't that many times that, you know, we could have our dining room table process, which is really is crucial for family bonding. But what we did was before bedtime at night, and we did this for 10 years or so. And as it turned out, story time at bedtime became so empowering for our family bonding. We didn't realize it, but that's what it really became.
Oh, that sounds so cool. And just getting to that quiet time where everybody is relaxed, they're finished their day, and to really share stories, that's wonderful. Can you give maybe an example or two of some of the kinds of stories that you and your children shared, maybe at different ages?
Let's see. I would say actually they were mostly adventure stories. I guess we all sort of like that proactive type of thinking mm-hmm. at time, who knows, but they really did evolve into adventure stories. And all of us, we created a character called Peaches the cat, and it was a boy cat, and he would soar around the universe on his big lightning bolt, and he just had adventures galore. And then the girls came up with, it's called the stickers, and it's called the sticker story, and actual stickers. I don't know if they're popular now, but they were huge, you know, back 10, 15 years ago. And they had the stickers who every Easter they try to foil the Easter bunny. And even a month ago at Easter time, I came up with another sticker story, and these are college girls.
That's great, having inanimate objects. We always gave voices to our pets, and stickers getting the Easter Bunny in trouble. That's wonderful. So what if you have the other parent isn't much, doesn't perceive themselves as creative or having a big imagination? How might you involve them in this process? Because it is so valuable at the end of the day.
Right. Well, I mean, that's fine. No two people are alike. At first, I would have the other parent listen, but definitely be a part of the group. That's the important thing, the group unity. I mean, there are times when I'm exhausted or my husband is, so we would take turns. And if the, let's say the other partner is a little reticent, you know, just how would I say, if they're business minded, I really would like to draw a connection here to Harvard Business Review. They have a wonderful article, June of 2003. It's called Storytelling That Moves People, a conversation with screenwriter coach Robert McKee. And he basically believes that executives can engage listeners on a whole new level. He says, get rid of the PowerPoint slides and learn to tell a good story instead. So if we could suggest that as the motivation to, let's say, a very, very, one-minded executive corporate type, say, hey, listen, this will help you in the corporate world. It's been shown to help CEOs because it gets they get the attention to their employees. The CEO's biggest job is to motivate people to certain goals, to engage their emotions, and the key to their hearts is a story.
That's awesome. Yes, I think that's a great reference, that even in the corporate world, they're finding that stories make a difference. And I know Steve Jobs doesn't get into all the technologies. I read a book about the way he does his presentations, and it's all about the excitement. If you get the other parent just sitting there and sharing in the giggles and the laughs and whatever is going down, they can get engaged. That sounds really good. Believe in modeling, you know, reading and being engaged in telling stories for your children. How important is role modeling for children? And I think we're up on a break, so I'm going to hold that question till after the break, if you don't mind. And okay. Please keep listening so we can hear more of Connie's great tips about helping your children learn to love to read.
Find out which guests are being featured this week. Read our network press releases and read the blog posts from your favorite hosts. Go to iradioblog.com today, powered by the Voice America Talk Radio Network.
What if thinking just a little bit differently about your daughter could make her more respectful, a better student, or less vulnerable to peer pressure? What if a few simple changes in your words with your son could make him more responsible, a better listener, or more fun? Five-time author and dynamic speaker Randy Rolfe has answers to your questions about family matters. Whether it's your kids, parents, schools, health and diet issues, finances, or life balance, Randy can help you. The World Ambassador for Family, Randy Rolfe has been helping families since 1985 to minimize the stress and heartache of modern living. To access some great and free downloadable tools, to get one of her internationally acclaimed books, or to have her inspire and excite your next event as your featured speaker, go to www.randyrolfe.com. That's RandyRolfe.com. Your family will thank you.
Learn more. Live better. Voice America Health and Wellness.
You're tuned in to Family First with your host, Randy Rolfe. To speak to Randy or her guests, please call 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. You may also send an email to randyrolf@randyrolf.com. Now, back to Family First.
Hello, this is Randy Rolf, and we're with Connie Baranzano, and she's very accomplished in law and business and publishing, and she did what many parents have dreamed of doing and wrote a wonderful children's book, and we're talking about how to help children love reading, and she has taught many classes and gets kids really involved and passionate and comfortable, relaxed and motivated to do reading, to tell stories, to really feel like what they're doing is important. And one of the ways that you advocate, Connie, is really modeling, role modeling for children. So what are some suggestions around that, and how important do you think it is?
Okay, well, I definitely think it's important. I think it's crucial, in fact. What I've noticed with children, with our own girls, with students, with some of their friends is consistent, and I actually noticed this even when they were, young babies even. Children like patterns, and that includes behavioral patterns, speech patterns. And I think what this ultimately does is it allows and teaches them to trust. Because they're very, very young beings, and I think as humans we have a need for trust, and by creating patterns, the greater the repetition, the greater the trust. So I really do think that's crucial. So as a parent, back to role modeling, that can actually be done very easy. I mean, easily find some, you know, good behavior patterns for yourself and your husband and your family and associations around them, and follow them and repeat them.
And what you said about it's okay to make mistakes, you know, if we stumble when we're reading something aloud, the kids realize that's quite all right. Seeing their parents reading, and not just for work or news, but for entertainment and learning, how important do you think that is, that the parents just actually, that the kids just see their parents using reading as an enjoyment?
Right. I mean, that's directly in key with the role modeling. I mean, if children see their parents reading, eventually they will do that too, because that's the environment they're in. It's definitely more the role modeling effect. Reading offers depth, flow, and understanding. You know, many times we all come in and we watch the headlines of the news and whatnot, but those are really sound bites for us. It's very hard to map out that time to actually sit down with a book, but it doesn't have to be for hours and hours. I really question who has that time anymore, but you can find 15 to 20 minutes, and maybe you can find that with your children, and you can sit down with your children and read while they're reading. The basic message is to let them know that sound bites and text messaging, it doesn't give you the depth that sitting down and reading a good book does.
Yeah, I noticed in your chapter book that the vocabulary is quite sophisticated. It's adult, and I'd love to hear your comments on, you know, talking to your children in a normal voice, with a normal vocabulary, and entrusting them that they will absorb what you're saying, and if they don't quite get it, they'll let you know. I love that there's a glossary in the book, and helps the kids increase their vocabulary in a non-threatening way.
Right. Yeah, that's a really, really nice observation. I don't like, I was never a proponent of baby talk, quote unquote. When the girls were smaller, I would speak in shorter sentences, but I would toss in a vocabulary word here and there. And, sometimes they would say, oh, what does that mean? And I would give them a very simplified answer. And all of a sudden, bingo, they picked up a word. And then other times, maybe not. But I would say it's more subliminal. Eventually, that they understand. And that's rather understanding and learning a new language. You eventually, you do pick up the meaning without having to run to a dictionary.
Yes, and that's the most natural way to learn, and then you don't feel like you're being tested about a particular word. You're just picking up a broad vocabulary. My grandson, just this afternoon, we were pushing him on a little tractor and uphill, and he said, "It's steep." And I'm like, wow, he knows the word steep. That's
cool.
Yeah,
that's a good word.
Yes. I understand you returned to the university to complete an MBA when your children were in middle school and high school, and a major motivation was to set an example of lifelong learning. Can you tell us a little more about that?
Yes, getting an MBA was something that I always wanted to do since the age of 25. So again, I, you know, waited while I did other things, but I never left the thought. And when the time was right, I did it. I didn't know when I would or if I would, but the desire stayed with me, and I was persistent. And all of a sudden, when my girls were in middle school and high school, they had rather gotten to the point where music to my ears, "Oh, mommy, you don't need to help me anymore, or I don't have any math questions." So that was great. So they either got those questions, they really had them resolved on their own. They would stay after school or meet with the teacher. So all of a sudden, my time opened up, and I thought, well, wow, I think I should do this.
Oh, that's so cool. I actually went back to school for a master's in theology, and I asked my daughter, you know, is this going to interfere with your life? And she said, "Mom, I don't need you anymore. You can go study what you want to study."
Isn't that funny? They say a lot of the same things.
Yes. And it sounds like you were modeling studying, too. Did your personal drive to continue learning help them with their own study habits when they left for college?
I would say most definitely. Again, when the girls were little, I was doing my homework while they were doing theirs. So when they got to college, these study habits really were ingrained. They knew to find a quiet place to relax their minds and to really focus on the task at hand. And, you know, they're doing very well, which is very nice. And the other interesting thing is that they said that they were almost over-prepared for college. In contrast to some of their friends that they met in college, they saw them struggling with some of these habits, where it was much more commonplace and a part of their lives.
Oh, that's really cool. That's good news for parents that,
yes,
by modeling good habits, the kids will pick up on that and understand how to research things and learn things. That's great. How might a parent who wants to include more reading and stories from what she's heard today, I hope, in her children's lives get started with a fun nighttime routine, say, like with a toddler or even before?
Okay. Again, it's back to patterns. It's up to the parent to find a time. It doesn't necessarily say have to be nighttime, but everybody knows that, you know, at nighttime we do wind down and we go to sleep. During the day, we have so many other things to do. So again, looking for consistency and patterns, nighttime became our time as a family. To focus on the much younger child, what we actually did with our girls, I'd say if the toddler has a favorite stuffed animal, either a stuffed animal or a doll or in some inanimate object, just make a short story, creating the animal as the main character. Or it could be anything. It could be a ball in the room. It could be a block. It could be, you know, anything, really, anything that the child relates to. And then to take it from there is, you know, you have several options. You can start a one-sentence storyline and ask your toddler to finish the sentence or to add the next sentence, or you could create spaces in your sentence and have the toddler suggest a word to fill in the blank. The whole point is to have fun with the process and to give the toddler some free mental rein, so they can look forward to the next evening, to empower them and to let them know that, hey, wow, you know, I've got some good input here. And then that gives them self-confidence.
Oh, that's so important that their contributions are appreciated. It's not like, oh, that's not the way the story should go. It's like when you're playing games, I encourage the kids to make up their own rules for a while, you know. Mm-hmm. And in your book, the adventures are, they're really unpredictable, and that's just so neat to have the that kind of imagination and the story just take a turn that you don't expect. And letting the toddler make that turn is really creative. So what are some other tips, Connie, about your concept of fun reading, how to just make it fun?
Okay. Well, let's see. Getting back to my book, Sea Breeze's Salt Air, when there were maybe some plot questions or character questions on how one of the bunnies would respond, listen to your children. You know, children, as I said, they have an innate honesty of what works and doesn't work, especially when it's concerning their world. I know there's a lot of science out there about, you know, intelligence and babies and whatnot. And I always thought, you know, every child has a huge amount of intelligence, you know, from day one, truly. It's just a matter of us adults trying to figure it out.
Yes.
But to really listen to your children, you know, what do they like to hear and learn about? The other thing is to develop a concept of fun reading is, you know, give them something new to think about, to challenge them, to consider. And then, you know, ask them questions and see what they say and have them ask you questions.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. I mean, trust goes both ways. You want them to feel trust for you, but also you need to trust them that you want to hear their take on things in their world. And speaking of their world, what do you recommend for parents who say, well, my kids want to play games on the smartphone, or they want to learn to text, or they want to watch videos all day long or all weekend long. What are some ways to pull them back into more creative storytelling and reading?
Okay, I know. We live in such a machinated world, machines.
Mm-hmm.
I know. It's great to get back to nature. I think certainly technology has its place, but I think, you know, limiting that input, because it is so out there with all of us. It has its good and its bad sides. You know, you look at the good, you can encourage them if they're very, very tech savvy. Well, then, you know, I don't know, what they're drawn to. It could be, you know, the computer technology, if that's it. But if you really don't see it there as a wholeness, you know, we're parents. We can steer our children. And just to be really observant, to again, listen to your children, to observe what they go to, not of what the pack is going to, as in text messaging and whatnot. But to really keep have a keen eye and a sharp eye with your child's interests, and then give them little successes. Look for little successes, because many children can be timid and inhibited. And once those children say, wow, you know, I've achieved such and such, you know, like I've drawn a house, I've drawn a tree, I've painted a really cute dog or a fun dog or anything like that. You know, encourage them, give them little successes, and eventually the little successes become large successes.
Oh, that's such great advice. We're up on another break, but please come back and listen to a few more great tips from Connie Baranzano on helping your children read.
Looking for exciting video content live and on demand? Visit www.voiceamerica.tv for exclusive content you just can't find anywhere else. That's voiceamerica.tv. Tune in now.
What if thinking just a little bit differently about your daughter could make her more respectful, a better student, or less vulnerable to peer pressure? What if a few simple changes in your words with your son could make him more responsible, a better listener, or more fun?
Five-time author and dynamic speaker Randy Rolfe has answers to your questions about family matters, whether it's your kids, parents, schools, health and diet issues, finances, or life balance. Randy can help you. The World Ambassador for Family, Randy Rolfe has been helping families since 1985 to minimize the stress and heartache of modern living. To access some great and free downloadable tools, to get one of her internationally acclaimed books, or to have her inspire and excite your next event as your featured speaker, go to www.randyrolfe.com. That's RandyRolfe.com. Your family will thank you.
You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
You're tuned in to Family First with your host, Randy Rolfe. To speak to Randy or her guests, please call 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. You may also send an email to randyrolfe@randyrolfe.com. Now, back to Family First.
Welcome back, and we're with Connie Baranzano, the author of Sea Breezes, Salt Air, Adventures with the Bunny Cousins. And we're talking about how to help your children really love to read, and she's given some great ideas about how to fit it into your busy life and really help the children learn to love reading and to build their own sense of self-worth. And we were just talking about how important it is to observe your children and listen and help them follow their passions and control their environment to a certain extent so that they don't get sucked in by some of the addictive digital world that kids often get into a little too early. And I wanted to talk a little more about something you mentioned earlier, Connie, about some of the insights that are being gained in the corporate world, and many parents don't even think of some of these ideas applying to children too. We're all children at heart, and things that work in the corporate world to get people interested and motivated and imaginative and creative are the same things as we as parents want to share with our children.
Right. I really enjoyed the McKee article. He has coached screenwriters for Forrest Gump, many of the top films out there. He talks about how stories fulfill a profound human need to grasp patterns of living, not merely as an intellectual exercise, but within a very personal, emotional experience. So it's a very core, deep type of exercise, and it's not easy. One of his quotes is, stories purport to display the struggle between expectation and reality in all its nastiness, quote unquote. So there's no need to paint a positive picture for executives here, because everyone knows it's unrealistic. I mean, you know, as workers and employees and managers and whatnot, we know that our jobs are tough. And if a CEO paints a positive picture, it's just not going to ring true, and he or she is ultimately not going to be respected. It's important to show the struggle and try to project a realistic outcome. And then you'll have believability. It also relates to the job of the storyteller. The storyteller has self-respect and self-insight balanced by skepticism. He says the skeptic hunts for the truth beneath the surface of life. So I think that's a very, very, very cool concept. So it makes the storyteller both at the same time active in the story, but also separated by it. And I think as a CEO, that's kind of what a CEO is. The CEO is separate because that job description oversees the management and the running, the day-to-day operations of a company. But then also, the CEO is in the middle of everything, because the company ultimately is a projection of who the CEO is. So there, you know, from the way I look at this, there is a direct correlation between the role of a CEO and learning the effectiveness of storytelling.
Yes, it certainly that what you were describing there sounded very much like a parent. You know, they are on the top and supervising and motivating, inspiring, teaching, but they're also right in the thick of it. And I think the parallels really work. And I get the impression that when you were publishing your book, and that you probably shared your struggles with your kids. You didn't say, "Oh, I'm going to publish a book and go out and get it published." They were aware of the process and the ups and downs of what you were trying to accomplish. Isn't that so?
Yes, they really did. They definitely saw process in the book. It took me probably about a year and a half to put together. At the time, I thought, oh, this is taking so long. But in hindsight, it really isn't that long. They got to see the process. They got to see the letters coming in from the mailbox, just with the barcodes. I mean, my corporate minute book arriving. And you might think, yeah, well, so what? They're not that important, but they really are. I mean, hindsight's 20/20. When they look back on this, they can think, wow, you know, I mean, we really did put together something, and all the little pieces, as I said before, add up to something big, but it is step by step by step.
Yes, it's wonderful, and I'm sure that was a great experience for them to see your ups and downs as you were going through this process, and letting them know that anything that's worth doing is going to take some work. Are there things that you would recommend for parents to encourage their children to follow their dreams? I know we talked about that before, but I just want to give you another chance to share your insights about how to encourage the children to follow their dreams if they're feeling right now, you know, someday I want to write a great book, or I want to, you know, fly an airplane, whatever it might be.
Okay. What I would say is really start small. Start in little steps, baby steps, if you will. Let's say if they want to fly an airplane, start drawing planes. Get a puzzle about planes, anything regarding that subject matter, and take it from there. And they may grow into designing a plane or a rocket ship someday, or they may decide to move on to something else. But at least they have answered that question for themselves.
Yeah, I love that idea of little successes that they made. Change in midstream, and that's all right. But if they've pursued what they wanted to pursue, then they feel the sense of accomplishment. And if they turn a corner, that's okay. But drawing pictures of a plane at the start is a great idea. So tell me how best people can learn more about what you're doing. And we're all waiting for the next book, I hope. But how can they get a hold of this book, Connie?
Oh, okay. Thank you very much. There are three ways. The book Sea Breezes Sold Air is at Amazon.com. I'm using the pen name C. Avery Brooks, which is a combination of my name and our girls. I have a website, BunnyCousins.com. And there's also my Facebook page at Constance Baranzano.
Excellent. That's great. Well, I really appreciate you being on the show. And next week, we're having a special guest also about the problem of not having enough nature in people, in children's lives, nature deficiency syndrome. So do tune in. And I want to thank you again, Connie. This has been great. And do get a hold of her book. It's a wonderful chapter book. It's very positive, but very exciting. Great adventures for the Bunny Cousins. And thanks for all your insights about how to help our children really love to read.
Oh, thank you so much, Brandy. This has been great, and happy reading.
Yes.
We hope you've enjoyed Family First. Please tune in to our program every Friday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time, 1 p.m. Pacific Time, to join your host, Randy Rolfe, on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. The weekend is here. Enjoy it with your family. And we hope to see you here next week.